Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 10th day of September 2019, a Tuesday. Tuesday already. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening, downloading, sharing, spreading the word, word of mouth. Tell 2 to 3 people a day, and you'll be my hero. It won't compensate you in any way, shape, or form, except in my eternal gratitude. But I do appreciate the hell out of the words that you guys are spreading, because that's the only advertising we got, ladies and gentlemen. It's how this thing grows. All right, we've got a lot of stuff to get to. It's been a really bad day for journalism again. CNN, I swear to God, I really truly believe that the media would destroy this country if it meant destroying Donald Trump. They would. They would become suicide bombers if they thought they could get Donald Trump with it. That's how sick and twisted these people have become. The story, the latest story, is, of course, involves CNN. I'll get into that in a second. As always, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Compliments, complaints, whatever you got. And to enter to win the signed copy of Sean Parnell's book, All Out War. I have at least one copy. They're in the office. I forget how many there were. But I'll be giving away one of them this week on Friday's program. So enter to win. I highly recommend it. Again, if you've bought it, just send me a screen capture of you with the book, or your receipt, or a picture of you with the book, not in a bookstore, and you'll be entered twice. Sean Parnell's a great dude, and you should definitely check out his action thriller, All Out War. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? But first, we have to say a word with our sponsor. Joining me now is the man himself, the founder of Life Change Tea, Ronnie McMullen. How are you, Ronnie?
I'm doing good. How are you, Derek?
I am doing great, and it's no small part thanks to Life Change Tea. Tell me, how did you decide to go into the tea business?
I got sick. I got really ill, and somebody, you know, of course, I was on radio at the time, had a radio show, and one of my listeners called me and said, hey, if you're really sick, you might want to try this tea. So I said, well, tea, I don't even like tea, you know, and, well, try it. It'll really help you. So long story short, I tried the tea. It worked well. I ended up working with a doctor to formulate my own tea that basically works even better than the original one that I tried. And since then, we've added organic and non-GMO supplements. So the business has just grown. But the actual core of the business is the super strength tea that we sell. So it's really, it's been a blessing. And my health it's changed my health. So I'm very, very blessed by it.
Don't just take our word for it. Go to getthetea.com now and check it out for yourself. Learn about all the benefits there and enter the promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout, and you get free shipping. Thank you for joining us, Ronnie. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Once again, that website is getthetea.com. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. Alrighty, let's get right to the soiled sheets of CNN's beds, shall we? They really do just god-awful work. Jim Sciutto, who just comes off as a pompous ass, he had himself a story. Boy, did he have himself a story. The headline even has exclusive in the headline. You think, holy Frank Tanana, what's going on, Jim? What is this massive exclusive that you have? The headline, U.S. extracted top spy from inside Russia in 2017. You think, oh, okay. In a previously undisclosed secret mission in 2017, the United States successfully extracted from Russia one of its highest level covert sources inside the Russian government. Multiple Trump administration officials with direct knowledge told CNN. These, I assume, are all holdovers from the Obama administration. A person directly involved in the discussion said that the removal of the Russian was driven in part by concerns that President Donald Trump and his administration repeatedly mishandled classified intelligence and could contribute to exposing the covert source as a spy. And there it is, right there at the beginning of the article. This source, this spy we had over in Russia, was pulled out because the Trump administration is so clumsily handling classified material that they feared for this person's life and had to go in and save them. He goes on to mention this and implies this in three separate occasions in the article that Donald Trump is the reason that this top-level source in Russia was pulled out. The decision to carry out the extraction occurred soon after the May 2017 meeting in the Oval Office, in which Trump discussed highly classified intelligence with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and then Russian Ambassador to the U.S. Sergei Kislyak. The intelligence concerning ISIS in Syria had been provided by Israel. The disclosure to the Russians by the president, though not about the Russian spies specifically, prompted intelligence officials to renew earlier discussions about potential risk of exposure, according to the source directly involved with the matter. See, now it's one source. It went from several sources to one source in just a couple of paragraphs. It's weird, isn't it? Well, you got all this information from all these. Well, this one guy said this one thing. Of course, none of these people are on the record. If they truly believed any of this, how could they in good conscience continue to work for such an administration? Why wouldn't they? Because they'll paint themselves as heroic. They'll say they're leaking this because they're the most patriotic people in the world and something must be done. If they really, truly are doing this from an altruistic standpoint and not some sort of CYA distract from other issues standpoint, why wouldn't somebody resign? Why wouldn't somebody resign and then come out and make the rounds in the media about this important discovery that they've made and tell the world why they have resigned because of it? Well, they won't. They don't. Because, well, maybe because it's BS. Because the New York Times, you see, had a very similar story. Their headline, CIA informant extracted from Russia had sent secrets to U.S. for decades. And if you scroll down, now the CNN story is all about how Donald Trump is at fault for this. Donald Trump did this. And implicit in that is wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Donald Trump is, you know, he's a Russian plant. He's a Russian spy. He's a friend of Putin, man. He's an FOP. So we had to get him out of there for his own good, save his life. But if you actually read the New York Times story, well down in the story, you find out a different story that CNN doesn't want to report right here. It's about paragraph 20 or so, maybe 15 in the story. Quote, New York Times, the decision to extract the informant was driven, quote, in part, end quote, because of concerns that Mr. Trump and his administration had mishandled delicate intelligence, CNN reported. But former intelligence officials said there was no public evidence that Mr. Trump directly endangered the source, and other current administration American officials, doesn't say administration, other current American officials insisted that the media scrutiny of the agency's sources alone was the impetus for the extraction. So it was media nosing around, media demanding answers, media digging, plying their sources, probably with alcohol, perhaps with prostitutes, that eventually said they're going to get to this guy. They're going to find out who this person is in Moscow, and we need to get them out. That is according to the New York Times, which, forgive me, but it's not a race you really want to win. It's not a tough race to win. But when it comes to trusting either the New York Times reporting or CNN's reporting, I'm going to go with the New York Times. They tend to do a little bit more thorough of a job. CNN's Jim Sciutto, of course, for those of you who don't know, he's a longtime journalist. Longtime journalist, worked over at ABC. He is the chief national security correspondent for CNN. But he also took a little detour in the middle of his career to work for the Obama administration. Yeah, he did 3 years in the Obama administration from 2011 to 2013. Because why not? He was a journalist, then he went into the media or to politics. He was a political appointee. Worked with, he was chief of staff to the U.S. ambassador in Beijing, and then he came back to journalism as if nothing ever happened. It's kind of funny watching the human potato, Brian Stelter, the Weeble. He won't, except I suspect he'll fall down. The Weeble going, my God, all of these people going from Fox News into the administration is an abomination, and shows just how closely tied to Fox News Donald Trump and his administration are. Meanwhile, he's roaming the halls with pretty much every otherwise unemployable Obama administration official and never says boo. Maybe he doesn't talk to, well, it's more likely nobody at CNN wants to talk to him. But you would think he would have heard about it, if only through the walls in the bathroom stall. So Jim Sciutto has this big scoop. Because of Trump, this guy had to be pulled out of Moscow. This important asset is now ruined because of Donald Trump, and the intelligence community just can't trust him. Then the New York Times says, yeah, no, that's not what we found. We found, in fact, the exact opposite. It was bonehead, blue-balled guys like Jim Sciutto sniffing around trying to find a story, trying to find some kind of way to attack the president that caused us to get this guy out back in 2017. By the way, they tried and offered to remove the guy in 2016 as well, which I'm not sure if Jim Sciutto knows that Barack Obama, his former boss and the guy who appointed him politically, was president of the United States. But that's neither here nor there. It doesn't factor in to Jim Sciutto's life. So this story is complete crap. And when a story is complete crap, what's supposed to happen in journalism? They're supposed to come back and clarify. They're supposed to come back. And if it is a major problem with a story, they're supposed to retract it. If a false story is out there, journalistic ethics say you must then retract it. If new information comes to light that kneecaps your story. Jim Sciutto, instead, since this is CNN, went on Anderson Cooper last night. And listen, it's a very short clip, but listen, I just read you two important passages from the CNN story and the New York Times story. And you noticed, and I pointed out exactly where they conflict. The CNN story is all about how Trump's fault, Trump's fault, Trump's fault. The New York Times story is, that's not true. Listen to how Jim Sciutto, award-winning journalist for CNN, frames the New York Times story.
Decided not to reveal some details out of concern and respect for the individual that it might somehow affect them. Is that right?
Exactly. We made an editorial decision. Now the New York Times has confirmed our story, and they put out details about the...
The New York Times did not confirm your reporting, Jimmy. The New York Times contradicted your reporting. That's the problem with CNN. Of course, they have no editorial standards over there. Jim Sciutto was on the programs all day going, well, now that the New York Times is confirming what we reported. No, you ascribed the wrong purpose, the wrong rationale for removing the source. It was all Trump's fault. Everything is Trump's fault. Everybody over there suffers from Trump Tourette's. Anybody who doesn't either gets suspended or fired. You know, there's no conservative voice in management or on air at CNN. There are a couple of pseudo Republicans who maintain their voter registration that way because that's the only thing they have to offer. Someone like a Matt Lewis, who brings nothing else to the table. You know, he's all about self-promotion. That's all he brings, so he pretends that that's, I'm a Republican and I'm outraged at Donald Trump just like you. Like, well, if you're just going to give the liberal opinion, why should anybody have you on their show? And they do it because they can say, now we turn to the conservative on the network. No, not really. But of course, Sciutto's lie already made the rounds because that's the way media works. It is a nonstop circle jerk. Vox News, their headline, CIA reportedly removed top spy from Russia over fear that they could be compromised by Trump. Bump, bump, bump. All a it's all Trump's fault, isn't it? Business Insider, their story. The U.S. had to extract a top spy from Russia after Trump revealed classified information to the Russians in an Oval Office meeting. They had to. It was all Trump's fault again. Washington Post, a shocking CNN scoop confirms officials are defending our country from Trump. Bump, bump. Just nonstop. Esquire magazine. The spies are acting as a check on our elected leaders. This is neither healthy nor sustainable, a guy named Charles Pierce wrote. They're all very serious people and very serious journalists who now very seriously have to retract their stories, but won't. They just won't. Why would they? Who's going to call them on it? Is Brian Stelter's Sunday show going to dedicate 5 seconds to this story? No, he's going to go on about who Tucker had on his program or what Sean Hannity said and how that's a threat to democracy. What Donald Trump said that was mean about the media. Oh, my goodness, he said something mean about CNN. They don't police their own. They don't hold each other accountable. This is why what we talked about yesterday with that project of the Trump supporters going around and looking through the old social media posts of journalists and holding them to the same standards that they hold conservatives, particularly Trump administration officials. That's why this is so important. Because they aren't going to hold themselves to any kind of standards. The New York Times flatly, directly contradicts CNN, and that's the only mention of it in the paper. That nope, that's not the case. CNN said this, but no, that's not true. And that's it. Maybe they consider that holding. Ooh, they really took him to the woodshed out there. Yeah, they took him to the woodshed and taught him how to work a lathe. And have him make a baseball bat. Like, that's not being taken to the woodshed. This is journalism now. It doesn't matter. The lie spread so fast that before the New York Times had the ability to come out and say, sort of correct the record, buried well down in their piece, all those other outlets that I read you, they'd already published. They'd run with it. They knew it. They knew it was coming, or they were ready for it and hoping and dreaming for it and just snapped to attention. It's all Donald Trump's fault. My God, Donald Trump is going to threaten the lives of these people. What an outrage. How dare he do such a thing? The man is a menace and needs to be removed from the office. It's that simple. And if the American people won't do it, the Democrats should do it in Congress. See, this is how the left works. If you don't vote our way, we should move to change the outcome of the election. And make no mistake, that is what this is all about. Overturning the 2016 election. They view Hillary Clinton's loss as a major injustice and Donald Trump's victory as an outrage, as an offense. But it doesn't matter. Again, they won't be held to account. They just won't. I mean, when you've got the major fact checkers who check politicians, not checking the media. You got PolitiFact. Let me just go on a side note here for about 30 seconds. PolitiFact, that is rally yesterday in North Carolina. Donald Trump mentioned how Governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, Democrat, blackface governor, he said on a radio show that talking about abortion. Everybody remembers this because this was about a week before his blackface picture came out. Said that if a baby is, you know, a woman should be able to abort the baby up until the last minute, even while in labor. And if the baby somehow survives that, the baby should be made comfortable. And here's exactly what Ralph Northam said, quote, "So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother. The discussion of whether or not they should kill that baby that had been born, that had survived an attempted abortion." Donald Trump pointed this out. PolitiFact decided that Donald Trump pointing that out is false. They said, quote, Trump says Virginia Governor Ralph Northam talked about, quote, after the baby was born, the doctor will talk to the mother and make a decision about whether the baby lives, end quote. We rated his similar claim about abortion false. Now, the quote I just read you from Ralph Northam was actually directly from the PolitiFact article declaring what I just read you from the PolitiFact article to be false. These are the people who are supposed to be the arbiters of truth, the final defense. These are the special teams artists in the truth world, the fact checkers. There is no more noble profession than a fact checker, and they award fact checkers special awards at their numerous award ceremonies. Yet when they do some basic fact-checking like that, they go, well, no, that's not... Yeah, sure, he said that, but that's not what was in his heart. We all know what was in Ralph Northam's heart, therefore we're going to rate this claim false, when realistically what it boils down to is we don't like the way this reflects on Democrats, therefore we're going to pretend that it didn't, that it doesn't. That it didn't happen. On the spy front, Kendallinen. Remember, Kendallinen has been on the program a lot. I just want to read this headline because they're all scrambling for ways to harm the president and protect the intelligence community before any of the inspector general's reports come out, before the attorney general manages to unearth something untoward in the investigation into how FISA warrants were obtained illegally and who was to blame and who was involved. They're all engaging in CYA, so everybody's kind of leaking information now. Out of fear. Kendallinen, NBC News, his story. New possible Russian spy for CIA lives in Washington area. Possible Russian spy or spy for CIA lives in one possible spy. You can see now why, when you've got morons like Kendallinen and Jim Sciutto sniffing around, asking questions in the intelligence community, and remember, progressives are progressives first. And while the top officials in these agencies are appointed by the president, the underlings are career. They have just as much access as the political appointees. So, if they're progressives, they likely have a loyalty that is to a party rather than to a country. Just want to point that out. Now, the NBC News story is typical NBC News. Possible Russian spy for CIA, now living in Washington area. The former, it's about the same person. They're all scrambling. They've all been scrambling because the people who want to distract are whispering in sweet nothings and pillow talk, going, this name, this name, this name. You might want to look into this name. NBC's version of former senior Russian official living in the Washington area under U.S. government protection, current and former government officials tell NBC News. NBC News is withholding the man's name and other key details at the request of U.S. officials who say reporting the information could endanger his life. Isn't that lovely? They're willing to out him, but they're going to pinky swear. And don't worry, the junior producer and the guy who runs all the cables, when they get access to that information, they're absolutely trustworthy. An NBC News correspondent went to the man's house in the Washington area and rang the doorbell. 5 minutes later, two young men in an SUV came racing up the street and parked immediately adjacent to the correspondent's car. The men, who identified themselves as friends of the Russian, asked the correspondent what he was doing there. The former national security officials said the men were likely U.S. government agents monitoring the Russian's house. Now, isn't that lovely? Isn't this? There was a time when stuff like this wouldn't have been reported. Not just because they'd have editorial standards at newspapers and news organizations, but then they would say, you know what? This serves no real purpose. this doesn't help. Nobody needs to know this information. If you know this information, what do you do with it? How does it change anybody's life? How does it make anybody smarter or better informed? That's no longer the case. They also wouldn't have reported on this because they would say that this could put this man's life in danger, even though they don't give out details. They don't give the guy's name. Now you just got to know that you could probably find some low-level production assistant or something at MSNBC or NBC News, and you could find out. You talk to a few of them. You could find out who was there, who went with the reporter, what's going on, and someone will talk. There was a time when they'd say, this could be damaging to the country. This could be damaging to someone who helped this country. I'm not going to do this. We're not even going to send out the reporter. It's an asinine story that makes no difference whatsoever. But that day is done. Now it is, can we weaponize this information against Donald Trump? If we can, go ahead. Let's do it. Let's find out. Let's go sick 'em, boys. Let's get that SOB. It's a sickness. Trump derangement syndrome. Look, progressives were always progressives first. But Trump derangement syndrome coupled with the general progressive mindset has doubled down and is now, frankly, and if we're being honest, put lives in danger. I suspect that this man will now be moved. Because if you're Vladimir Putin and you had some decades-long close advisor suddenly disappear last year or 2 years ago, maybe they don't just come in and pack up their stuff and rent a U-Haul and go and get all their things and move them out. If it's a high-level asset that is going to fear for their life for the rest of their life, there's a high probability that that person would have been, had their death faked, something like that. In any event, it was likely that after they disappeared, because they don't just, again, move, I'm going on vacation and I'm never coming back, they disappear this person. That if after somebody disappears, that Vladimir Putin might not like that person being alive. He does have a history of assassinating people or allegedly assassinating people. So you'd want to keep that person's whereabouts generally secret and safe. Well, now you've got a general idea of where this person lives in the Metro Washington, D.C. area, thanks to Ken DeLine and NBC News. Now you've got all of these people. You know that people at CNN, at the New York Times, and at NBC News, probably a couple of dozen people, now know where to find this guy. Well, how long do you think it will take with all the resources Vladimir Putin could throw at him if he wanted to find a way, send some honeypot to one of these mid-level people and find out this information. Also, around Washington, D.C., there are little enclaves of things. You know, there's a lot of Spanish neighborhoods. There's heavily Korean neighborhoods, great Korean barbecue at these places. There are Russian areas. Now, if you're a former Russian government official and you've only really lived in Russia your whole life until recently, might you feel comfortable near one of those areas, even though it's kind of possibly dangerous? Wouldn't you want to try and avoid the language barrier? You can come up with some fake backstory about who you are. You're probably not widely known outside of Putin's inner circle. Wouldn't, if you were looking for this person, wouldn't you start there? Because that would make sense. Well, now they'll likely have to move, thanks to the intrepid, very important, soon-to-be, undoubtedly, award-winning journalism conducted by these boneheads in an attempt to make the president look bad and no other purpose whatsoever. Sick, sick, sick people. They all make paychecks with at least 50 after the number. Probably 60, meaning 7 numbers. And there are moral superiors. Just ask them. Good God, they do love themselves, though. If you don't know who Max Boot is, don't feel bad. Nobody knows who Max Boot is, except for a few people, and most of them regret knowing who Max Boot is. He's, I don't know, there's something wrong with the guy. I don't know if he was beaten as a child or not beaten as a child, whatever. He was either beaten too much or not enough. He's a columnist at the Washington Post, and he hates himself, some Donald Trump, and all Republicans. He's one of those, I'm a Republican, but I can no longer be a Republican as long as Donald Trump is in the party. He also probably spent the last 10 years talking about what a big tent the Republican Party is. He has a column. It's kind of funny. I just want to read you a passage. And he's, again, paid a lot of money because Jeff Bezos has more money than he knows what to do with. And he hires boneheads like Max. Max wrote a famous book about, well, not a famous book. It didn't really sell. But he wrote a book about why he left the Republican Party. No, the Republican Party left me. The Republican Party didn't know you were in it. If we did, we would have left you a long time ago. He writes, quote, don't get me wrong. I love what I do and realize I am supremely lucky to be able to make my living by writing and speaking about the news of the day. I find contentment in the craft of writing and fulfillment in self-expression. Isn't that great? Don't you just want to, I don't know, kick him in the vagina? But I do sometimes wonder what I am actually accomplishing. So does everybody else who has the accidental misfortune of reading your crap, Max. Much of my journalism for the past 4 years has been devoted to critiquing President Trump and opposing the spread of Trumpism. But no matter how many columns or sound bites I produce, he remains in office, acting more erratically than ever. Sure, he's not terribly popular, but he could still be reelected. I am left to ask if all my work has made any difference. Sounds like somebody smoked some new strain of weed and is having a reflective moment going, oh my God, what if all of life is just a reflection of the past and nobody's truly alive? They're just having their lives flash before their eyes right now, man. Suddenly he's a Cheech and Chong movie or a Matrix movie. You're not making any difference, Max. You're a freaking columnist for the Washington Post. Nobody reads you. You're on CNN. You're a CNN contributor. Nobody watches that. Doesn't matter how many comments you get. You're preaching to the same small choir. If you write a post that is read by 1,000 people who are incredibly dedicated to your work, you can get a lot of comments. You can get a lot of traffic, people going back and checking the comments and engaging in conversations in the comments. But that doesn't mean you're doing anything more than preaching to the choir. But the pure narcissism, I keep writing the same thing over and over. I've written the same thing for 4 years, and I haven't made a difference. Mean Orange Man Bad is still in the White House. It makes me wonder whether or not it's worth it. Am I making a difference? No, you're not, Max. You're not. Take a look at your book sales. You are not making a difference. Perhaps the only option left for you is jumping off a bridge. I'm kidding, of course, Max. Don't jump off a bridge. Find something higher without it being over water. I kid Max because I hold him in contempt. Speaking of being held in contempt, I just thought that Max Boot story was funny. Like, these are, maybe this is a thought that keeps you up at night. Maybe it goes, you know, geez, am I doing anything that's making a difference in the world? You don't write it. To me, this tells you that Max is running out of things to say because he's written the same column about 1,500 different times. He really literally has. He writes the same thing every time. So when you go back to write it for the 15th time, you probably should stop yourself. But when you're going back in double and triple digits, you really start to wonder what you're doing with your life because you'll be meaningless. Life needs a little bit of meaning. Here's just a sample of something. I just pulled it up on the computer while I was talking to you. These are the headlines of his columns. A new poll shows voters aren't buying what Trump is selling. Trump proves he's a better deal breaker than deal maker, this time with the Taliban. Two of our most important allies are fighting. Trump is nowhere to be seen. Madison Mueller won't denounce Trump. Here's why that's okay. Here are 14 reasons I'll vote for any Democrat over Trump. Is Trump a liar or a fantasticist? Whatever. Neither option is good. On gun violence, Republicans are a profile in cowardice. The only cause our president is willing to serve is his own well-being. Those are just the most recent columns. But Max Boot wonders whether or not he's making a difference. Boy, saying the same thing, essentially, just in a different picture frame. You can imagine going to a museum, and they go, we have Van Gogh sunflowers. You should come to see that. And that's all they have is different posters of Van Gogh painting of sunflowers. But each one is in a different frame. Well, after how many minutes? 2 minutes? Which you go, all right, this museum sucks. Let's get out of here. Most people would do that. Most people would see that. Max Boot just keeps putting a new frame on the same old crap and goes, what are you going to do? Here it is. Trump's terrible. Trump's terrible. Moving on. Trump's terrible. Trump's terrible. No wonder people get sick of listening to these people. Speaking of museums, though, there was a story in Time magazine. I'm looking at this story. I'm looking at the Twitter machine, and this comes up. They're debating now because the left loves to redefine words based on the political convenience of the moment, right? At marriage, you had this one whole massive thing, but this long-term definition, but now it's something completely different. They'll redefine anything. It was global cooling, global warming, climate change, illegal immigrant, undocumented immigrant, migrants. Now they just, whatever it is, they'll just redefine it. They're not into book burning anymore because that's too obvious. They're just burning the dictionary one word at a time. Here's the Time news story. The headline: Why a plan to redefine the meaning of museum is stirring up controversy. Now, does the word museum need to be redefined? Does what constitutes a museum, is that in need of revamping? Is that really where we are as a society? When you visit a museum, chances are you think more about the item you're there to see than about the museum itself, much less about the meaning of museums in general. But while art and antiques are what draw millions of curious visitors to museums each year, the last matter has long long preoccupied the people who work in them. Is a museum simply a building to house objects? Is it there to engage with the public, to make an active stance on political issues? All of the above. They're going to screw up museums, is what they're doing, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, there's apparently some international organization, and this lets you know that we're really out of problems as a society, the International Council of Museums. They're having a general assembly, and they're set to vote soon. It's members from 119 countries. They're going to vote on what is the definition of a museum. Now, what are they talking about? At the heart of the matter is an attempt to outline exactly what a contribution to broader society could look like for museums today. The proposed new, this is all from Time magazine, the proposed new definition, which may be amended before another vote takes place, describes museums as, quote, democratizing, inclusive, and polyphonic spaces for critical dialogue about the pasts and the futures, with a goal of contributing to human dignity and social justice, global equality, and planetary well-being. End quote. That means that the second you set foot in a museum, for it to constitute a museum, according to the International Council of Museums, it has to somehow push social justice. That's what they want it to be. This is the world that we're living in. That's a departure from the current ICOM definition. It states that museum is a nonprofit permanent institution in the service of society with traditional functions such as acquiring, conserving, researching, communicating, and exhibiting, which is the freaking definition of a museum. But the social justice warrior set will infect everything. They are like an airborne plague. So now museums, well, how does this exhibit? handle? How does this exhibit advance the cause of income inequality, of gender equality, of transgender rights? Now, the museums that, you know, you like to go and look at the paintings, the sculptures in, are going to have to get rid of a bunch of crap, probably, because they're going to say, you know what? We have far too many white people's artworks in this museum, and that's a problem. This museum is not representative enough of the full spectrum, the rainbow of flavors of human beings, and therefore we can just get rid of some Rembrandts or some Picassos and replace them with who knows what. You know, if there's great art out there, the world is aware of it, and it's not Whitey's fault that Whitey developed painting on canvases long before anybody else and became better at it sooner. But that will now be considered a social injustice, and they will be called racist. And why on earth are there so many? I like this painting, and then I found out that it was a white guy who painted it. Oh, and he was in living in colonial times. This is an outrage. We see this in San Francisco, where they're going to paint over a mural of George Washington because of the way it depicts the noble Native Americans. It's an outrage, and it offends students' sensibilities. Well, those students should probably be given swirlies. If anybody actually looks at a mural for more than the 3 seconds it takes to walk past it, you have too much time on your hands and you have no real problems in your life. And you're desperately scrambling to find a way to paint yourself as a victim because that's all the rage amongst the left. The same thing is going to happen in art museums. We see it now. People were protesting because a defense contractor, I forget what it was and I'm not going to look it up, but it's not that hard to find. A defense contractor's family was one of the major patrons of one of the big museums in New York and even had a seat on the board. And the leftist mob was demanding that they reject the money and kick the person off the board. Now, the leftist mob likely never sets foot in the museum. Likely has no freaking idea. The name just came up on a list and they said, we must hate this person. They're different than us. And so it goes. It will be repeated over and over and over again. The Great Purge. Yes, the purges in the past in progressive societies around the country. The Stalinist purges, the Nazi purges, the Maoist purges. They all took place at a time when they were officially government sanctioned. Official government people were pushing people out, putting them in concentration camps, whatever you want to say. They were the ones doing the purging. So it was important to stop these leftists from getting power, we thought, because that will stop the purges. No, they have bypassed the world of the power of government. They have found a way to infect directly institutions and purge that way, purge ideas, purge thought, purge whatever is impure, whatever is deemed impure. People need to wake up. This has happened at universities. Conservatives, if there's even a whiff of the possibility that a professor be conservative, they will be denied tenure. And it will be they can always come up with some sort of bogus reasons. Well, you know what, we don't, you're the wrong color, or we need more diversity, or we've just decided not to expand the department, whatever it is. Now it's spreading to this. Where will it go next? It's already in corporate America. It will go everywhere until it ends up in your home and it ends up in the White House. And then it will become official government policy. And by then it'll be too late. There'll be nobody left to protest it. That's how the left works. They are an airborne plague. Speaking of airborne plagues, remember the name Mark Halperin? Mark Halperin, he was part of, along with John Heilman, Halperin and Heilman, who, if you call John Heilman Sieg Heil on Twitter, he blocks you. I know this firsthand. Well, Mark Halperin was Me Too'd. He got drummed out of the business. He was one of those people that was exposed during his years and years in journalism, particularly at ABC News. He'd pressure women into having sex with them, threatened them, say that they'd never work in the business again. He was at ABC News. He was a big muckety-muck. So he had that kind of power to young girls. They didn't know any better. He was rubbing himself on people. You know, he's probably one of those guys that walks, brushes past women on subways. That perverted, that sick. Well, he's trying to make a comeback. He's got a big book coming out soon with interviews of a whole bunch of Democratic campaign strategists. And they've all agreed to talk. It's all about how you beat Trump. How do you beat Trump? See, he knows. He knows the way into the hearts of the left. So he's got this book coming out where, you know, like David Axelrod, they all sat down and talked with him. Well, he wants to get back on TV. He was a staple on Morning Joe. And this story, this is NBC News. They can actually get the claws out pretty good sometimes. Daily Beast reports, disgraced political pundit Mark Halperin was very unhappy when NBC brass nixed his attempt to repair his career through a possible collaboration with the stars of Morning Joe. Don't you love that? The stars of Morning Joe. So he picked up the phone and called network chief Phil Griffin. It did not go well. Multiple sources tell the Daily Beast that the conversation earlier this year became acrimonious, with Halperin dishing up vague threats against the former boss. He was fired from NBC News. He was fired from everywhere because he was outed as a pervert. NBC declined to comment on the episode, but MSNBC insiders said Griffin was furious about the conversation and wouldn't likely take Halperin's call in the future. Now, why would you take Halperin's call at all? Interesting question. The hostile exchange was a sign of Halperin's frustration that his dream of returning to the punditry business almost 2 years after numerous women came forward with stories of sexual misconduct has been thwarted at each turn. He desperately wants to be back in the mix. See, that's where the cool people are. That's where the money is. That's where the prestige is. And that's where the women are, too. The former MSNBC contributor has been attempting to rehab his career that imploded when former colleagues and subordinates accused him of groping and unwanted sexual advances during his tenure as an NBC News political reporter. After months of silence, Halperin began dipping back into the public eye. Earlier this year, he launched a blog called Mark Halperin's Wide World of News. And did radio interviews and things like that. Now, Mark Halperin and John Heilman, they took a massive, massive hit to the wallet. They had, after the 2018 election, they wrote the Game Change book. Big, big bestseller. Hundreds of thousands of copies sold. And then after the 2012 election, they did the book Double Down. Both of them were made into, I think they were both made into HBO movies. Or at least the Double Down was going to be, that might have been nixed. But they had another book about the 2016 election. And these guys were granted extraordinary access to the campaigns. They had all their notes gathered. And then the Me Too story broke. And suddenly Mark Halperin became toxic. And John Heilman, being the loyal friend that he is, and in Washington, D.C., there is no such thing as a loyal friend. They will dump you. They will dismiss you. They will run away from you. He ran away from him. He used to be on that show, The Circus, on Showtime with John Heilman. I think he co-created it. That show continues. John Heilman is on it. They just replaced Halperin with Alex Wagner, who used to be on MSNBC. They said, well, we need another liberal. Let's get another liberal. And so they got another liberal, and they just kept on chugging. It was as if he never existed, and they never spoke about him. They don't really speak about him on MSNBC. He was a major fixture. He was a contributor there. He was a regular on Morning Joe, and now he might as well not exist. I can see why he's pissed, because I bet that, you know, there are tales of grab ass involving a lot of people at NBC News. And he's saying, look, I did my time. When do I come back? I'm trying to sell a book, trying to make a living, and they're not going to let him. They shouldn't let him. They should also probably hold some, but, you know, I guess I could see why he thought he could, as he's watching NBC News and MSNBC and saying, good God, they have no standards for reporting whatsoever. How can they have any standards for sexual misconduct? Let me back in. Let me back in. But it looks like we're going to have to wait for that reunion of Heilman and Halperin a little bit longer. Kamala Harris is in the news. She's getting criticism a little bit over her campaign's failure to really connect with, but she's been a horrible, horrible candidate. Great biography, and in the Democratic woke off, the woke Olympics that is the Democratic primary, she is a black woman, and that should put her in the top tier of candidates. But the voters have other ideas, mostly because they listen to her, where she doesn't really say anything. She doesn't really stand for anything. You get the feeling when you hear her talk that she is racing through her mind to try and come up with whatever it is that the audience wants to hear. And she says it in a vague enough way. Remember, we had that montage. We need to have a serious conversation about this issue or that issue, because she doesn't want to actually have specifics. That's too binding. Well, now she's recognizing that she better do something. So she's released a plan for criminal justice reform. Now, we already passed criminal justice reform not that long ago. You would think that people would be kind of content with that for a little bit, but no. Listen to her ideas. The Associated Press, California Senator Kamala Harris, whose record as a prosecutor has been under scrutiny since she entered the presidential race. Yes, she's also not getting any traction in the Democratic primary because she used to work in law enforcement, and the left hates law enforcement. She's trying to make it up with them with this plan. Has unveiled a criminal justice plan that calls for abolishing the death penalty, ending cash bail, and collecting more data on officer-involved shootings. Isn't that lovely? Those are her priorities. Harris condemns the death penalty as, quote, immoral, discriminatory, ineffective, and a gross misuse of taxpayer dollars, end quote. The California Democrat also calls for eliminating mandatory minimum sentences at the federal level and ending the use of private prisons as well as solitary confinement. So if you are a criminal, you got your candidate right there. There is nothing in this that is for the victims, that is concerned with victims of crime. And she's not talking about people who have unpaid parking tickets or facing jaywalking crackdowns. No, she's talking about serious criminals here, ending cash bail. Well, if you're caught with so the only option is we hold you forever or we let you go. Well, if you're on the cusp, well, expect to be held forever, I guess. And then sooner or later, they're going to say, well, you know what? We need to get people out of prison. We need to do this. We need to do that. Cash bail is important. Setting exorbitant bail is, you know, a problem that could be addressed on the state level. If you're in there because you robbed a liquor store and your bail is $300 billion, yes, a case could be made that you are facing exorbitant bail. But in general, bail is not particularly exorbitant. It tends to fit the crime. Murderers and rapists tend to get very high bails. In fact, in cases of drug dealers and less than murderous violent crimes, bail is oftentimes set too low. Now these people want to get rid of bail altogether, put more people back out on the streets sooner. Private prisons are great. They save taxpayers' money, but somehow they are now being portrayed as the most awful thing ever. How could somebody profit off of this, that, putting people in prison? It is an outrage. It is an outrage. Well, no. What's an outrage is our national debt and deficit, and if this saves us some money, so be it. Set the standards, make the companies meet it, and make sure that they're meeting those standards. Problem solved. The concept isn't the problem. If there is a problem, to the extent that there is, I suspect it's in the execution, as is often the case with government. Now, ending the death penalty. Immoral. I love these leftists. The death penalty is immoral. Well, what do you call raping a 7-year-old girl? Is that moral? What do you call providing the guy who did that with 3 hots and a cot for the rest of his life or for 15 years or whatever lenient sentence these people are, because they're going to define deviance down? She's trying to appeal to voters in the Democratic primary. It's a desperate, desperate attempt. As a matter of fact, she appeared on some show. I don't know what it was, but it was with the voice you're going to hear at first, or not at first, but the most in this clip, is the editor at large at Slate. His name is something like D. Watkins or something like that. It's unimportant. What he says is important, because right as soon as he's done saying it, it's a panel discussion. Right as soon as he's done saying it, you're going to hear Kamala Harris's voice agree with it. Not disagree, agree with it. She doesn't address it. She just agrees with it. Now, why? Because she doesn't want to piss off the woke base of the Democratic Party. So she'll put up with, tolerate any sort of thing. Now, what you're going to hear Dee Watkins say is incredibly anti-police. And she just agrees with it. There's no reason to set it up any more than that.
I was telling Angela earlier today, I got a call from a chief yesterday saying, when are folks going to start talking about the trauma and mental health illness that's going on within law enforcement, who are witnessing the same thing in the communities that communities are feeling?
We shouldn't have to acknowledge that trauma, because like, they're paid to be there. We live in these places. Like, police officers have historically not been held accountable because they protect and serve the rich, and then they just harass and take up space in poor communities. I don't see any type of big shift happening with the one term, because it's like a cultural thing.
Right.
Right, right, yeah. I don't, cops, they just oppress and take up space, man. I don't know why anybody would want to be a police officer these days. You have half the population who sees a political advantage to demonizing you. And if it costs you your life, who cares? They don't care. Individuals are expendable to the left. So what? It's all in the name of the cause, so they can be killed. Who cares? It's no big deal. They're not losing any sleep over it. This is the modern Democratic Party. Speaking of the modern Democratic Party, finally today, there's this website called Now This News, I think it is. They release a whole bunch of mindless videos where they take things out of context to sort of lionize liberals. They're one of the biggest cheerleaders of AOC, for example, and they will cut 3 seconds from a 30-minute interview of her and say, oh, see, now she's genius. And when reality, if you give the whole context, it exposes just how dumb she is. This is where the country is heading. This is a video put together by their team featuring one of their team members. And it happens to be a woman. Or I guess I have to say it happens to be a woman of color who is lecturing you, everybody, over their use of the term guys. Like, hey guys, let me have your attention. Or hey guys, let's get going. Something like that. By using the term guys, you are normalizing oppression. This is, again, a sign that we are out of real problems. You would never know it from the pearl clutching class, whose hands have fused to their pearls. But they are insisting that this is awful and needs to be addressed.
Hey guys, welcome back to Now This. Guys is a simple term. It could mean boys, or if you're modern, hip, it means people. At first glance, guys seems inviting, friendly, maybe warm, even comedic at times. But it, like many male default terms, should not be normalized as an all-encompassing phrase, innocent as it may seem. While we may understand the word means no real harm, with a deeper look, you'll understand that we've been ignoring the cognitive impact on women as well as gender nonconforming folks by only explicitly addressing the male identifying individuals present.
Remember what I said earlier about somebody should jump off a bridge? I think maybe it was Max Boot. I was only kidding about Max Boot. This person, I'm not kidding about, this person should jump off a bridge. And then their body should be brought back up onto that bridge, and it should be thrown off the bridge yet again. This goes on for like 6 minutes. I'm not going to play the whole thing. I have just one more short clip to show you how asinine and insane every Democrat is. If somebody asked a question about this at the next Democratic debate, they will definitely, absolutely, positively agree that somehow the term guys is awful and horrible and needs to be banned.
For decades, we have set a standard of only addressing the men in the room. Of course, we claim it's colloquial, but with our elevated knowledge and inclusive perspective, it just seems lazy, inconsiderate, and a small part of what reinforces the gender hierarchy today. How is one to feel empowered to speak or assert themselves when upon greeting, they're misgendered or even ignored in language?
If you can't handle somebody calling you guys and you are a woman, meaning a whole group of people and it's guys comes in and you suddenly lose your ability to speak, your confidence is gone, it's shot, it's all downhill, your day is ruined, your weekend is ruined, anybody around you is just going to get an earful because you're ready to snap. Or if you are gender fluid mutant out there who just can't handle the prospect of somebody not, you know, in general terms, acknowledging your proper pronouns, you also need to find a big building, a tall building, or maybe even just a wood chipper, because there is something wrong with you. We are out of problems as a society, and we have a whole group of people who hate this country, and it's based on lies. They're told this is a horrible, racist, sexist country. It's transphobic. It's monstrous. It's an epidemic of it's being overrun. And they go out into society and they go, I'm going to hunt that down. I'm going to find all the homophobia and the racism. I'm going to destroy it. This is an outrage. And they go and they look for it and they don't find it. And they can't find it. And they don't know what the hell is going on. So either they lower the bar, which is what this is here, or they create their own hate crimes. They commit a hate crimes hoax and say, look at this horrible hate crime, and file false police reports and graffiti on things, racial slurs and things, and say, see, this is where it is, because they know it's out there. They've been told by people in society, the people in authority. I write about this in my book. There's a whole chapter on this, as a matter of fact, in my book, of this mentality. They churn up these little social justice warriors and they send them out into society imbued with this idea that this is a horrible racist country, and they go hunting for that racism, and it's a horrible sexist country, and they go hunting for that sexism, and they don't find it. And rather than go, maybe it's not as bad as prevalent as I thought. Maybe that I was lied to by these people. No, because it was told to them by people in the media, by professors, people who are supposed to teach them, people they're paying good money to teach them, not to lie to them, to tell them the truth, to prepare them for the world. They say, no, it has to be something. It's out there. It has to be. So I will draw attention to the issue by creating a hoax, by creating a fraud myself. And you end up with this vicious cycle where all of these people can't find what they're looking for because it doesn't exist to the extent they've been told it exists. So they're now lowering the bar. Using the term guys to address a group of people is part of the patriarchy and oppressive. Well, if that's the patriarchy, if that's the oppression you're facing, you got a pretty good life there, sweet cheeks. Now, why don't you sit down, sugar tits, and shut your mouth? The men are talking. That's all the time we have for today. I'm going to catch hell for that. That's all the time I have for today. I don't care. Get over yourselves. God, parents, this all started when parents stopped hitting their kids. Not beating their kids, but hitting their kids. Parents, spank your kids. Especially when they come home pulling this crap. I don't even care if they're 25. Spank them. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend, spreading the word, sharing it on social media, and all that good stuff. Email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. And otherwise, be back here tomorrow.
How is one to feel empowered to speak or assert themselves when upon greeting, they're misgendered?